Montana is talking here. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, I'll tell you what, whether you're a Montana State Bobcat or a University of Montana Grizz fan, I got good news for both of you. Because if you're a Grizz fan who are just overjoyed that the Grizz came out on top in Saturday's Cat Grizz game, the Grizz just mauled the Bobcats on Saturday. If you're happy about that, well, exciting news. We could have another Cat Grizz game in less than 1 month. Likewise, if you're a Montana State Bobcat and you're mad and you're thinking, man, we destroyed the Grizz last year, and then we got destroyed this year, I want a rematch. Well, you might get a rematch here. How cool would that be if we had a second Cat Grizz game this year? But, yeah, looking at the NCAA bracket, we could have another Cat Grizz football game here in Montana next month. Since the University of Montana came out on top on Saturday, Missoula would get to host the potential playoff matchup. That is if both the Montana State Bobcats and the Grizzlies win their first two playoff games coming up December 2nd and the weekend of December 8th. So we've got the full bracket listing. Go to MontanaTalks.com. Want to give a quick shout-out here also to the high school state champions as well. Just a series of headlines for you from 406MTSports.com. The Class AA Football Championship, Bozeman euphoric after redemptive win over Kalispell Glacier for the title. Class A, Dillon takes down Columbia Falls on the final play. Class B, Florence Carlton's record third straight title, the coolest thing ever. And the eight-man football championship, the Fairview Warriors claimed their second state title since 2019. I think that's the game that our friend Tim N. Savage was broadcasting. He was calling the Fairview Belt game. And the six-man football championship, Centerville tops Freud Medicine Lake for their first six-man crown. So that's a quick snapshot of some of the action that took place over the weekend. Lots to talk about this morning here on Montana Talks. We've got a great guest kicking off the 8 o'clock hour for us here this morning. Jeremy Carl is a senior fellow with the Claremont Institute, lives in Bozeman, Montana. When I saw this story, I thought, man, we got to reach out to Jeremy Carl to see if he wants to give us insight on this big election news out of Argentina. Down in South America, Argentina, for those of you who don't know, has had a very radical left-wing government. Very far left. They've been basically in bed with the communist Chinese. They've been pushing this radical transgender ideology and so much more. But inflation, you think inflation is bad right now under Joe Biden and John Tester? Well, re-elect both of them and you'll see just how bad things could really get, like Argentina bad when it comes to inflation. Javier Milei, they're calling him the Donald Trump of Argentina. Javier Milei pulls off the big victory in Argentina in the Argentinian presidential elections over the weekend. Blake Masters says this: in 2016, Brexit prefigured Donald Trump's election. Now Argentina foreshadows Trump's return in 2024. We'll get the take of Jeremy Carl out of Bozeman right after this. Hey, what do we got coming up on Monday's Montana Talks? Heck, I couldn't even tell you what was coming up Friday. And then we got a great phone call from Representative Bill Mercer talking about jail and prison capacity issues. So we threw him on Friday. So what should we talk about on Monday? Well, why don't you tell us? You can either call into Montana Talks on Monday and be heard all across the state, or send me a message on the Montana Talks app in the meantime. Tell us what you think we should be talking about. Montana Talks statewide, 9 to 10 right here.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, jumping right into it here. We've got Jeremy Carl, a senior fellow with the Claremont Institute, a great think tank here in America. But he lives right here in Montana, lives in Bozeman, Montana, and always gives us great insight whenever he joins us on the show. I got to reach out more often because it's always fun to catch up with Jeremy. Jeremy, man, I know we could talk about a whole host of things. Before we get into the Argentina election, though, I got to ask you, I don't know if you watched the Cat Grizz game or not, but apparently on Saturday, while the Cat Grizz game was taking place under the fog below, the left-wing anti-Israel activists basically turned the M above Washington Grizzly Stadium into the Palestinian flag colors. Now UM officials quickly had the display removed, but isn't it just crazy how these anti-Israel activists will openly tout these Hamas terrorists that run the Gaza Strip, and they continue to promote this?
Well, as a Bobcat supporter, I'm tempted to make a comment about Missoula, but I know you're a UM grad, so I'll let it fly.
Oh, you can do it. You won't offend me. Don't worry.
it's sort of incredible, and it's interesting. It kind of shows how the fever is spreading, because this is the sort of thing, these sorts of disruptions. We're used to seeing these at like Harvard-Yale football games or these kind of New England, schools where they do this. And in fact, they were trying to disrupt that one over Hamas activism as well. But the fact that this has kind of now made it down to Montana is just the point of us really needing to be vigilant about this stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, it was funny. Alan Dershowitz, though, made a great point. You know, the liberal constitutional law professor, Alan Dershowitz, made the point. You realize there's no Islamophobia on these college campuses, but there's this big anti-Semitism on these college campuses. And then Dr. Jordan Peterson, the renowned Canadian psychologist, was on with Bill Maher over the weekend, and I thought he really summed it up very well, that this cultural Marxism that exists on these college campuses, they see the West as bad, so anybody that is standing against the West is naturally therefore good, even terrorists in the Gaza Strip.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct, and I think where I get a little skeptical of some of the just pure anti-Semitism narrative is that I think it's really, it absolutely does exist, but it's subsidiary to the sort of anti-white, anti-Western orientation of the modern university and of modern institutions kind of that lead society in general. And Israel's kind of being targeted in their mind for that reason, not sort of per se because it's specific to the Jews, although in some cases it is, but it's sort of part of a much broader sickness that we have in the leading institutions of American society that we really need to be much more vigilant about.
That's right.
Confronting and reading out.
It's an extension of the anti-white racism that they've been openly promoting, and now they falsely then try to say that, well, Jews are white, and so therefore they're bad too, is what these woke leftists are doing.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I also want to get your take on the war between the ADL and Elon Musk, because that's an interesting story as well. But first, your reaction to this big presidential election out of Argentina. They're saying this guy's the Donald Trump of Argentina and just pulled off a big victory down there.
Yeah, I think it is fascinating, especially since during the campaign he did some things and maybe very similar to Trump in this way. That you would think, wow, you know, anybody who speaks this way, there's no way they're going to win, right? It's just going to be too much for the voters. Not that I would necessarily oppose it, but it would just, he would say some stuff that would be really out there. But in fact, he won quite decisively in the runoff. I think he's kind of a cross, quite honestly, between, if you could imagine, Donald Trump and Ron Paul. I mean, ideologically, he kind of is very much out of the sort of paleo, what we'd call it in the kind of think tank world, a paleo libertarian or paleo conservative with a strong libertarian streak ideology. But stylistically, he certainly owes a lot to Donald Trump in terms of his kind of his populist rhetoric, his willingness to take on the institutions, his willingness to say things very bluntly that other politicians and other people running for office were not willing to say. And it turned out to really work for him. And then, of course, the challenge will be now that he's got to actually govern this country, which is sort of a mess right now.
Yeah. I mentioned earlier, we think of bad inflation here in America right now under Joe Biden and John Tester. Well, reelect both of them and you'll see how bad things can really get, like Argentina bad. Tucker Carlson recently, I watched a video he put together. He went down and interviewed Milei and went to Argentina and focused on inflation. And Milei has said they're gonna switch now from the peso to the U.S. dollar.
Yeah. No. And there's a lot to be said for that economically. I mean, there's some ways. I mean, this gets into sort of some complicated technical elements of economic policy. But the downside is, of course, that you give up a certain amount of control over your own economic policy when you do that. But you also gain this much more robust currency, although, of course, Biden's doing everything he can to sort of devalue and destabilize that. But this is not even beyond precedent in South America. We've seen this in Ecuador, where they do use the dollar, and we've seen this in some other places. And I think kind of given where they are, it's not an unreasonable thing that he wants.
And not only was this a rejection of a leftist government in Argentina, but it was a rejection of a pro-China leftist government. It was a rejection of a leftist government in Argentina that's been promoting this radical transgender agenda as well. Jeremy, if you can, stand by. We'll come back to you after the break. Plus, we'll sneak in a phone call from Francis in Big Fork right after this.
This is where Montana talks. You're listening to Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we got a couple of great messages that came in on our Montana Talks app this morning. I mentioned that our friend Tim in Savage was broadcasting and calling the Fairview Belt State Championship game over the weekend. Tim sent us a message. He says, yep, was a great game in Belt, and I got to meet Evan. Evan, our great Air Force veteran listener here to Montana Talks. In fact, speaking of Evan, before we got the message from Tim, we got a message from Evan in Belt. Hey, according to one of the news briefs I heard this morning on the radio, our state attorney general says that the fentanyl coming across the border is going to way surpass that of last year's record-breaking year. How does that square with John Tester's ads saying that fentanyl is destroying our state and that he will stand up to anybody to defend Montana? The only standing I see coming from his campaign is him standing behind President Xi, especially when it came time for him to get money from two different Chinese-owned businesses who own property in Montana. Good job by Evan and Belt calling out Liberal Senator John Tester for his phony, fake, lying campaign commercials. All right, we're going to talk more with Jeremy Carl from the Claremont Institute. He's going to stay with us through the 8:35 break here. Francis in Big Fork, did you have something quick you wanted to share as well?
Well, I was turning the TV on last night, and one of the senators, I didn't get his name, but he said Mitch McConnell is holding up money, that they had passed the bill to give money to Israel, and he's sitting on it.
So McConnell is holding. I know Chuck Schumer has been holding it up, but God, Mitch McConnell's gone so far off the deep end here in recent months, it wouldn't surprise me if he's holding up the Israel aid package as well.
I believe that.
Time for McConnell to go, isn't it?
Something funny, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hello? Okay, you know where Tester's driveway goes up to his place in Big Sandy? Well, he's got big signs on each side of his road.
Oh, that's hilarious. From the neighbors. So Tester's neighbors are backing Tim Sheehy for the Senate over John. They must have had a few weeds blow into their pasture or their farmland.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Well, that's hilarious. Francis, you got to send me some pictures of that. I want to see that. That's good. All right, Francis, always great to hear from you. Jeremy Carl, before we go back to talking about this Argentinian election, you're probably tracking. Yeah, Mitch McConnell, he's almost no different than Chuck Schumer on some of this stuff anymore. It's time for him to go.
Yeah, well, long since time for him to go. And the only important thing is that the question of who's going to replace him. I'm not super encouraged by some of the folks that I see being floated around for that. And I just hope that we get somebody better in his place. I'd love to see Senator Dade take his place. I don't want him to go yell at me for that, but he'd be certainly much better than any of the names I see being floated out there. But, you know, it's interesting with Tester and that sign really quickly. I think one of the things I've talked to folks at the senatorial committee about this, if you look at where Tester does, he sort of runs these I'm the real Montanan ads. And when you actually look where he runs better than the average Democrat is in places like Missoula. So basically, in many ways, they're targeted toward transplants and more liberal people in Bozeman who think that that's what a real Montana should sound like. But for actual rural Montanans, they're not fooled by kind of what Tester's selling in his commercials. So hopefully that will continue to play out well for us.
I tell you, his ads, I don't watch much TV, or if I do, I'm not watching the commercial breaks. So I just hear what's on the radio typically and digital ads. But yeah, Tester was blanketing the Cat Grizz commercials. And it was all with this phony, I stood up to Biden, I stood up to China. For Pete's sake, you flip-flopped on TikTok. You took money from TikTok lobbyists. Oh, you introduced a bill to ban the Chinese ownership of foreign land. Well, how come you haven't passed the bill? Because the Montana legislature and Governor Gianforte signed that into law, but you just introduced the bill and didn't do a dang thing with it. He's such a phony.
Yeah, no, I'm actually working on a piece on him right now called The Biggest Fraud in the Senate, and I need that. I mean, he is actually in our state, and so it's at some level, okay, well, fine, you know, it's targeted, but I really do think that's true. There's nobody who there's a greater distance in the Senate between their reality and the image that they're portraying. There's nothing moderate about him. He's supported every single radical element of the Democrat agenda. This is not at all a Joe Manchin type figure. He's a liberal Democrat in a state that is a conservative state, and you know, we need to get rid of him. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. You know, no, I think you're exactly right that, the biggest phony, the biggest disconnect between what he pretends to be and who he actually is in the Senate. Like, you know, we all had our criticisms of you know, Fetterman out of Pennsylvania. And you know, you feel bad for the guy and the health challenges that he had. But to be honest, at least he's not pretending to be somebody he isn't, which is sure what John Tester is doing and has been doing since 2006. Back to the Argentinian presidential elections, where they're calling him the Donald Trump of Argentina. Do you see this as a broader rejection of communist Chinese influence in South America, a broader rejection of the radical transgender agenda in South America as well, or is this pure economics and inflation?
Well, they're always what political science statists call overdetermined, right? It's that there's more factors that probably contribute that you can kind of immediately sort of identify when you add it all up. It kind of ends up, it's sort of hard to pinpoint what's the one thing. I think all those play into it. I think economics certainly drove it. I think a frustration at the level of corruption, and I think this is where it kind of ties in very well the United States, because he really ran against the corrupt established government. And by that, he didn't just mean the kind of party that happened to be in power, but what we would sort of call the deep state here. I mean, that's kind of what he ran against. And I think people realize that Argentina has been just a dysfunctional place and kind of run by this sort of corrupt deep state entity and for quite some time. And so I'm a little bit skeptical that he's going to be able to overturn all of that, just because he doesn't have great support within the legislature for his party. But he's really aggressive. Just like Trump, he knows how to use the media. And if he's able to really use the media to get the people on his side and push some of these public changes, it'll really put the left in the entire Western Hemisphere on notice.
Yeah, I love there's a video that's kind of going viral on Twitter or X where it shows him and he's got like the task org chart of the federal government, you know, with a black with a sticker on a whiteboard showing each government agency. And he says, oh, the Ministry of Cultural whatever gone, throws it in the trash, you know, and because that's what, I mean, you know, the dire situation facing our national debt and our inflation, similar thing needs to happen here. Department of Education, trash.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's something we've been promising to get rid of since Reagan, and I love it if we do it. I'd love to just see us run the campaign that we're going to take the $80 billion or whatever it is now, it's some ridiculous number, and just take that and send all that money to states and localities for local schools or school choice. And I don't think that that's as difficult a political lift as our leadership has sort of made it out to be. So I'd love to see something like that here.
You mentioned West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin and how, you know, John Tester is really the phoniest of all of the U.S. senators right now in terms of this gap of pretending to be a moderate but really being nothing of the sort. What's your take on Joe Manchin right now? Do you think he'd actually do a third-party presidential bid, or do you think he'd just run as a Democrat until that sputters out?
I think he's really looking at it. I would say, based on the rhetoric I'm seeing right now, there's a really decent chance he does it. I don't think that he has any realistic hope of actually winning, but in the same way that Ross Perot did, he could be quite disruptive. It's not totally clear to me. I think he probably hurts Biden, and I think certainly the Democrats think he hurts Biden, but and I'd certainly say that Trump's support, assuming that he is the nominee, is a more solid base than Biden, and therefore having any additional candidates in there probably helps Trump, but it's not really clear, because depending on the sort of campaign he runs, I mean, he to some degree, I don't want to overestimate his independence, because he's usually been with the Democrats when they've needed him, but he is, to some degree, at least what John Tester pretends to be, which he has been an independent vote at times, and not somebody who the Democrats have just been able to count on for their most radical sort of program.
Well, and RFK Jr. is still out there. I haven't heard much about his campaign of late, but I did see somebody, I think it was a Fox News piece, where they were suggesting that actually if RFK Jr. were in the race, he might actually take more votes from Trump than he would take from Biden.
Right. Yeah, I think it's really unclear, and people sometimes get wrapped around the axle about stuff like this a little bit too early. It's really, you have to wait and see how it plays out, who they're really targeting with their campaign and their messages, and then what things look like at the 11th hour when it really begins to look like, well, if I vote for Kennedy or if I vote for Manchin, it's going to lead to, or it's going to help lead to X candidate Biden or Trump winning, and maybe I want that or I don't want that, and you have these last-minute defections. I mean, we saw this going back to John Anderson even in 1980. So I think it's not totally predictable how any of that plays out electorally. But I would say maybe in just the broadest sense, because Trump has such a strong base of support that won't move off him, that probably a bigger field is helpful to Donald Trump.
That's right. Well, we're already hitting our 8:35 break. I wanted to get your take on Elon Musk in the Anti-Defamation League. Jeremy, if you got to run, totally understand. But if you want to stick around, we can come back to you for some quick thoughts on Elon Musk versus the ADL as well.
Happy to do it.
All right, perfect. And then I want to share a soundbite from Dr. Jordan Peterson on Bill Maher's program over the weekend, talking about the meta-Marxism and why the West is turning its back on Israel, especially on these college campuses in particular. Lots to come. Plus, we've got the phone lines open for you for the rest of the show, 406-294-0970.
This is the Montana Economic Minute.
We're a year out from the next election, but the silly season has already started. It's the time when 30-second ads serve up soundbite solutions for our problems. Those ads take our understanding of issues backwards. In fact, they make problems harder to solve. One simple solution making the rounds is the idea of decoupling from China. Much of what is said or implied in those ads is true, of course. China has increasingly pursued political confrontation. Its record of everything from complying with contracts to protecting intellectual property is appalling, not to mention its record on human rights. But China is also a huge economy that is so integrated into the economies of Western nations like ours that it would take decades to pull the plug. And it's that way for a reason, because it's been mutually beneficial, growing their middle class as it showered consumers here with benefits. Unwinding the tens of thousands of production relationships that have been forged over the years may still happen, of course, but doing so would be hugely painful and definitely not simple. I'm Patrick Barkey.
Brought to you by the University of Montana Bureau of Business and Economic Research.
Talk talking about the issues that matter to Montana. Statewide, this is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right. Thanks to our producer, Travis, for printing up the latest Unleash Prosperity hotline. Boy, they've got a great write-up here by Steve Moore. Argentina voters reject socialism. Could America be next? Don't cry for Argentina. Whoop it up. Strike up the band. In fact, I was in the hallway. I ran into our Bobcat faithful friend here at the office, Heather, and she's got a tailgate in Bozeman for every home game. And strike up the band anyway. We both were talking like, what the heck happened to the Bobcats on Saturday? It was like they weren't even there. I mean, even Coach Vegan, it was just like, I remember seeing a shot of him on the sidelines, the Bobcat coach, and it was like, man, he's like not even standing upright on the field. He's kind of back. He just doesn't look like he's even there for the game. It was just crazy. She couldn't believe it either. But we may have another Cat Grizz game coming up here in about a month. Anyway, back to it with Jeremy Carl, senior fellow with the Claremont Institute, joining us from Bozeman. Yeah, this Unleash Prosperity hotline by Steve Moore talks about how this is the biggest election sonic boom in a major country since Trump sent Hillary to the canvas. And Steve Moore says this is a big, big deal. Finally, the Argentines have solidly rejected the Peronistas, who first took power in 1946 and brought socialism, despair, and poverty to Buenos Aires. This is interesting, Jeremy. It's Steve Moore writes here, could it happen here in the USA in 2024? 1 year ago, it took 6 pesos to buy a U.S. dollar. Now it costs nearly 400 pesos to buy a dollar. Tim in Billings has a question for Mr. Carl. Wasn't Argentina once one of the wealthiest countries in the Western Hemisphere prior to them going socialist? Wasn't there a saying, rich as an Argentine? Also, didn't they buy more Ford F-150s than any other country, including the USA? Socialism ruins every society it touches. That was from Tim in Billings.
Yeah, well, Tim is actually spot on, and I can't remember the exact year, but sort of I'll use as a proxy placeholder, around the turn of the 20th century, Argentina was maybe the third richest country in the world. It was certainly right up there in per capita income with the U.S. It was particularly wealthy off cattle ranching, among other things, but it had a very robust and developed business sector, and then just over misgovernment, over a series of decades, has just kind of found itself in the increasing basket case level of desperation that it is today. And we obviously would like to avoid some of that same sort of thing in the U.S., but if we don't get some sort of a handle on our deficit, it's a risk for us as well.
Exactly. Elon Musk versus the Anti-Defamation League. I remember, you know, in the days following the October 7th Hamas terror attacks in Israel, I think it was, I remember seeing something, there's an X.com account, a Twitter account called Stop Anti-Semitism, that was exposing all of these leftists and their pro-Hamas tweets or social media postings. And one of the pro-Hamas social media posts came from somebody who worked for the Anti-Defamation League. And I'm sitting here thinking, wait a minute. I thought the Anti-Defamation League is supposed to stand up for Jews and for our friends in Israel and against anti-Semitism. But, huh, it's such a left-wing outfit now that they've literally got the enemy inside the gates.
Yeah, and they're not the only one, sadly, of sort of leading Jewish institutional organizations that have kind of had more of a commitment over time to leftism than they have to either Israel or Judaism. And conservative Jews have actually been pointing this out for quite some time. And Elon Musk pointed this out in his typical shoot to the hip way on X. And of course, people on the left completely lost their mind, tried to organize boycotts. And I'm almost tempted to not even pay too much attention to the substance of it because it's all in bad faith. It's just the latest way that they can have to try to go after Elon and to shut down the one free speech outlet that we really have. But even on the substance, it was sort of encouraging that people like Ben Shapiro and then Bill Ackman, who's been visibly leading the boycott against Harvard and some of these other places for their kind of pro-Hamas leanings, both defended Elon and said, hey, you know, this is fair game, and Elon is not an anti-Semite. So I think the left is continuing to try to use this same playbook, but it may not be working quite as well now, and I think that's very encouraging.
Yeah, because bottom line, basically, the Anti-Defamation League has basically been another one of these, organizations that may have started for good reasons, but got co-opted into one of these typical anti-white, anti-Western, let's follow the left-wing BLM chant line on everything. And so that's what's driving it. So of course Elon Musk was right to criticize the ADL, if you dare criticize the ADL, they're going to call you an anti-Semite. Meanwhile, their side is literally painting the M in Palestinian flag colors above the University of Montana on Kagura Saturday, right?
Yeah, no, it's crazy, and they're just, again, it's all a pretext, and it's really clear where the politically relevant, I mean, not there, look, they're anti-Semites throughout the political spectrum that you could find, but the politically relevant anti-Semites are in the Democratic Party and they're on the left, and some of those guys and the sort of pro-Hamas crowd are putting a lot of pressure on Joe Biden right now. In fact, you've seen Biden's numbers sink quite a bit among Democrats because he has been generally pretty supportive of Israel in this conflict.
Yeah. Well, Jeremy, if you got to run, I understand that. We just thought we'd get you on for a few minutes at the start of the hour, but it's always great catching up with you. So thanks for sticking around for this amount of time. Did you hear Dr. Jordan Peterson on with Bill Maher? I don't watch Bill Maher's program. I don't have HBO, but I have been enjoying several of the highlights here. Did you happen to catch Dr. Peterson on Bill Maher's program?
I didn't. Like you, I often, whatever media I consume, from TV is whatever people put on Twitter. So I didn't see that.
That's right. Well, let me play a quick Charlie Kirk, the great Charlie Kirk, shared this via X.com. Let's see. Well, he shared a couple of things. First off, he shared a poll by the Arab World for Research and Development, which is a Palestinian research organization, finding that 75% of Palestinians supported the Hamas terrorist attacks on October 7th. So another good reminder of why we should not be accepting even one refugee from the Gaza Strip. But also, Dr. Jordan Peterson told Bill Maher and his audience regarding the Israel-Hamas war. He talked about why cultural Marxism is completely incompatible with the West and why these cultural Marxists are turning their back on Israel.
And then you see the situation is that the leftists have already decided the Palestinians are the victims. And as you pointed out, if you're a victim, then you're morally righteous. And even more conveniently, if you stand for the victim, then you're morally righteous regardless of what you do with your own life. And that's pretty much what university students are taught from the time they enter the university classroom. And that's how they, orient themselves morally. Well, and that's at the hands of the radical left, too, Bill. And one of the things the Democrats also have to pay the price for, I would say, is their absolute refusal to draw a line between the moderate Democrats and the extremists.
All right. Yeah, well said. Jeremy, could you hear those remarks there from, I know I had you.
I could, absolutely.
Okay, good. Yeah, your take.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree with that. The left in particular is addicted to this victimhood culture and that victimhood, and if you can show that you're the victim, it shows that you're somehow morally better. And it's a real problem. And in fact, I've got a book coming out early next year on kind of the rise of anti-white discrimination. And one of the things I tried to think about in doing the book is I wanted to outline this stuff without kind of falling into the left victimhood trap, where we're just now going to be one more group saying, woe is me, because I think it's important to point out the really bad things that are happening that are out there. But at the same time, we don't want to fall into the sort of endless victimhood narrative of the left, where it's all just about showing that you're the biggest victim, and then regardless of your behavior, you're somehow the most moral. And I think that's very much what we see playing out in the Israel-Palestine issue right now.
Yeah, well said. All right. Well, Jeremy Carl, great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us. And I know... I saw it on the agenda. When about when your book comes out, you're going to be one of the keynote speakers for the Big Sky Worldview Forum that takes place at one of their future seminars as well. So that's going to be a fascinating program. So folks will have to check out the Big Sky Worldview website. Make sure they get that one on their calendars for sure. All right, Jeremy, great to have you. Thanks so much for joining us. Maybe we will see you at the next Cat Grizz game, if they have one, about 1 month from now in the semifinals for the FCS playoffs. That'd be a ton of fun. To have a second Cat Grizz game. Phone lines are open for you. Anything and everything you want to talk about, we'll be back. Now's a good chance for you to call in right now during this next break, or you can send us a quick message on our Montana Talks app if you got a quick message that you want to share as well. But, yeah, phone lines are open right now. Anything and everything you want to talk about, and we'll keep the phone lines open in the 9 o'clock hour with one Frago, Major General Paul Vallely, out of Big Fork, retired General Vallely. I think he is going to join us at some point in the 9 o'clock hour as well. So great show coming up.
Turn up your radio. Here's the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
I have a simple question on this. This is not a complicated issue. What part of the First Amendment does this judge not understand? This is not a difficult case to handle here. And by the way, where we're at it, we now learn that, in fact, there's not going to be any charges at all against Joe Biden as it relates to the document scandal. Now, remember, they found documents from the days he was in the U.S. Senate at the University of Delaware. They found top secret classified material in his own garage next to his precious Corvette. They found it at the UPenn Biden Center. They found it at Joe Biden's beach home. They never raided any of these locations. But if you don't think we have a dual justice system or a double standard, this is exactly what I've been saying we have happening.
Check out the Sean Hannity radio show later today, right here.
All right, Black Friday savings start right now at Blinds.com with up to 50% off everything. That includes big doorbusters. Blinds.com has everything you will need to upgrade your entire home. Plus, with professional design consultants, installation services, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee, Blinds.com makes it easy. Shop now, Blinds.com, their Black Friday sale, and save up to 50% off everything and big doorbusters. That's up to 50% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Ashley Banfield and Chris Cuomo on America's fastest-growing cable news network, News Nation.
The viewer seems to have been lost in the shuffle of cable news lately. They don't want a team sport. They want the full picture.
The appetite is greater than it has ever been for perspective, for understanding, and for information that they can not just trust, but use.
See why more people are turning to News Nation, news for all America. To find News Nation on your screen, go to joinnn.com.
I'm Chad Pergrin with the Speaker's Lobby. New Mexico finally became a state in 1912. It was the culmination of a six-decade push. That's why Democratic New Mexico Senator Martin Heinrich says don't give up on the potential of statehood for Puerto Rico. The Caribbean island has been a territory of the U.S. since 1917, and there have been repeated pushes for autonomy for Puerto Rico. Heinrich notes that things like statehood sometimes seem impossible, until they're not. Heinrich has introduced a bill which would allow Puerto Ricans to vote on three different status options: statehood, independence, or sovereignty, where there's still a tie to the U.S. The measure has 20 original co-sponsors in the Senate. That's more than previous efforts in the chamber. Still, there's no clear path forward for the legislation in the Senate. A similar House bill has attracted just 12 Republican sponsors. Puerto Rico has held several votes on its relationship to the U.S. in 2012, 2017, and 2020. In the 2020 plebiscite, 52% of voters said yes when asked whether Puerto Rico should be admitted to the U.S.
Blake Simply Safe.
Broadcasting from the Grizzly Gold and Silver Studios, trusted by the Northwest, Montana owned. Online at grizzlygoldandsilver.com.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we got a great show coming up for you here on this Monday from Montana Talks. First off, hope everybody is having a great start to their Thanksgiving week here. We're going to have some great programs coming up for you every day this week, all week long. So especially if you're hitting the road, traveling, what better time to listen to the radio and to talk radio in particular. We're talking about local Montana issues, the national issues, you name it. Hey, well, later this hour of the show, we're going to open up the phone lines to anything and everything you want to talk about here on Montana Talks. If you got something you want to talk about, I say later this hour. It's only 8:54. Did you see what I just did there, Travis? I thought we were opening up the 9 o'clock hour. I need another cup of coffee. Hey, we got phone lines open right now. If you want to call in right now, 406-294-0970. That's hilarious. I was down the hall. I was BSing with the Breakfast Flakes, and we were talking about, you know, the Cat Grizz game. And then we were talking about, they had their big Flakesgiving. They give away turkeys for families in need for Thanksgiving. They gave away 1,300 turkeys, big full-size turkeys for their Flakesgiving fundraiser they've done every year on the country station in Billings. Anyway, I was chatting with them, and I come back in here. I'm like, all right, let's get this 9 o'clock hour started. I was sending off an email to General Vallely, and I thought we were opening up the statewide 9 o'clock hour, and here we are. All right. Yeah, I obviously need some more coffee. Here we go. Nice addition to the show. We've got coming up at 9:10. We're going to give a phone call to Major General Paul Vallely, retired U.S. Army general. He sent out, I'm glad I got more time to get ready for this one, by the way, because I want to play that song again to go with this story. Baby, come back. U.S. Army begs soldiers to come back after they were forced out for not getting the COVID vaccine. What does retired General Paul Vallely have to say about that? We're going to catch up with him at the start of the 9 o'clock hour. And actually, I've been looking for an excuse to get him back on the show anyway, because he also has some great thoughts when it comes to what needs to be done to secure our southern border. I think I saw a latest write-up that he put together talking about his proposed Operation Sinaloa. So we can talk a little bit about our southern border as well with retired General Paul Vallely coming up later on in the 9 o'clock hour. Let's see. What is something I haven't gotten to yet with just about an hour or so to go here? McCarthy responds to Chip Roy. I think many folks have already seen that. Since we're going to be talking with General Paul Vallely, let's share this. This is a General Jack Keane talking about how the Biden administration is going way too soft with the communist Chinese.
I think there should be meetings. We've proven that in the years, 45 years in the Cold War with the Soviet Union. And some of those meetings, particularly between Reagan and Gorbachev, actually led to an improvement in the situation in terms of the nuclear treaties. We're very far from something like that here. But nonetheless, I mean, my concern about the meetings, I think, has always been from the outset, is the administration's behavior. They believe by having these kinds of meetings, they think they can change China's behavior. China operates in its own national interest. And the only thing that I've seen it in terms of impacting its behavior is when it's confronted. And I don't believe these meetings are going to serve that kind of interest. China walks away from the meetings. They certainly publicize them as an information tool back home. Certainly that standing ovation that President Xi got, I'm telling you, is going to play over and over and over again. To have American business leaders doing something like that, I think, is something outrageous. China is conducting the most comprehensive penetration of American civil society by a cyber espionage campaign in the history of the United States. I read in between the lines, and I think the FBI in China counter it is somewhat overwhelmed. They're not saying that, but I believe that's probably where we truly are.
All right, there you go. More to follow back after the national news coming up.